Ron DeSantis and Andrew Gillum are in the final days of campaigning for Florida governor as both visit Jacksonville. Shad Khan says he will not make a bid to buy Wembley Stadium in London. And speaking of sports, the Jacksonville landing could be cut out of all the Florida-Georgia fun. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, local personality Octavius Davis. Hear what he has planned at the Ritz Theater this weekend. Plus, it's called 15 Views of Jacksonville. Short stories from the bold city, the new book that's out today. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, a busy news week. Here to discuss it all, we welcome John Bachman of Action News Jax. Good to see you, John.
Good morning. Good to be here. Thank you.
WJCT contributor Charles Griggs is here. He's host of the Real Talk podcast.
Good morning, Melissa. I'm happy to be here.
And David Cotton of the Jacksonville Daily Record.
Good morning.
Guys, so good to have you because it's been a very busy news week locally. Lots to talk about this morning. Jaguars owner Shad Khan made headlines around the world the other day when he decided not to buy Wembley Stadium in London. We'll talk about what that means for the Jaguars. Speaking of sports, the Jacksonville landing may be cut out of all the Florida-Georgia fun due to a legal battle. That's coming up too, but we begin with politics as both Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis campaigned in downtown Jacksonville last night within a mile of each other. Gillum before a packed crowd at the Hyatt, DeSantis before a smaller group at Veterans Memorial Arena. Now, the two candidates for governor are in a virtual dead heat with just a couple of weeks to go until Election Day. Andrew Gillum told our partner News for Jax he's campaigning on, among other things, expanding Medicaid to low-income residents.
By expanding Medicaid, we're also going to pull down $6 billion from the federal government that right now is being given away to other states because Florida philosophically doesn't agree with health care.
For his part, DeSantis told supporters at the arena that voters shouldn't trust Gillum because he's a career politician.
My opponent is a career politician. He literally got elected to the Tallahassee City Commission right out of college, has never worked ever in anything outside of politics his entire career.
All right, we begin the roundtable with a closer look at the governor's race as the candidates both came to town last night. Give us a call and let us know who will get your vote for Florida governor, Ron DeSantis or Andrew Gillum. The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. John Bachman, let's begin with you. You know, on the face of it, it looks as though Gillum is favored to win. He certainly drew a bigger crowd in Jacksonville last night than his opponent, former Congressman DeSantis. However, with just a point separating these two candidates and a couple of weeks to go, Florida elections are notoriously tight and unpredictable. This is going to be a fascinating race to watch as it goes down the stretch.
Yeah, the polls say it's a dead heat, and I think it probably is. As is a lot of the case nowadays, I think whichever candidate does the best job of pulling in the middle ground, the folks that are on the fence, you know, you've got DeSantis, who's been endorsed by President Trump, Gillum, who's been endorsed by Bernie Sanders, and everybody else in between. So where does the middle ground go? Do they go left or do they go right?
Exactly. Charles, you know, a third of Florida voters are no party affiliated. They are independent. So they are going to be weighing these candidates and deciding which vision they like better. And that will make the difference.
It will make the difference. And this is a turnout election, as we know that with the numbers have been saying that people are registered and ready to vote. More people are going to probably vote in this election, this midterm, than have in a long time. But at the same time, you know, you got to recognize Jacksonville is a battleground area, and so you're going the independents are the no party affiliate people are important to this election. So I have a hunch that this won't be the last time we see both candidates here in this area prior to November 6th, much like what we saw in the primary with Andrew Gillum. He spent a lot of time here during the primary, down the stretch in the primary.
He really ran up his numbers in Duval County, for sure. It's 549-2937 to join us. At the same time, David Cotton, DeSantis is speaking to his supporters saying, St. John's County, turnout. Nassau County, turnout. I need every vote in this corner of the state. He's trying to run up his numbers here as well.
Yeah, he's asking everybody who came out and voted for the president to come out and vote for him. And when we're talking about independent and non-party affiliate voters, they're really looking at two very different campaigns, right? Ron DeSantis has focused his entire campaign post-primary on attacking Andrew Gillum, especially now that Susie Wiles and Tim Baker are there running this campaign.
Two local consultants for
Absolutely.
Republicans, yeah.
And Andrew Gillum, I mean, you know, is more or less focused on his own platform. And so I think with independent voters, I wouldn't be surprised to see them gravitating toward Gillum more than they do DeSantis.
And is healthcare the reason why? Gillum is campaigning heavily on expanding Medicaid, making healthcare more affordable, calling that a bipartisan issue that will bring over moderate voters. John, Charles, will that be a winning message, do you think? Has the ground shifted enough on healthcare for that to work for Gillum, particularly when he accuses DeSantis and the president and Republicans of wanting to take away coverage for pre-existing conditions and issues like that? Is that resonating with voters? What do you guys think?
Gillum is not afraid to put that issue on the table, especially with all of the opportunity or the money, the funding that was left on the table by the previous administration, or the current administration, I should say. And his message is that there's economic development opportunity in the money that's been left on the table for Medicaid expansion. So if that resonates, we'll find out in November. But it certainly is something that he's banking on to help people in the state understand that this is opportunity for the state, and sitting by and letting the opportunity go away isn't a good thing.
Maybe this is a cop-out, but it gets back to what Charles was saying. It's a turnout. It depends on which of those folks on the fence turns out more, because clearly a lot of folks supported where we are as a state right now currently. Mm-hmm. So if those folks do turn out and turn out for DeSantis, then in fact, that may be the case.
But, right.
So that's where we are. I mean, I think it really will determine, which party can get the most people out to the polls.
Well, and you're also seeing Democrats right now, all over Twitter and social media, saying the same thing about Ron DeSantis, that he doesn't have a healthcare plan, or that he has not presented a healthcare policy. So you've got Gillum really running with this, this whole idea with healthcare. And then they're also pushing back on DeSantis not even having anything. I mean, I believe he probably does have something, but he has not articulated that to voters 3 weeks out before an election.
Yeah, not leading with that, but what he is leading with is Andrew Gillum is too far left for Florida.
Yes, he's a socialist, right?
So my question to you then, is that a message that will resonate?
I with his base, I don't think with independents and NPAs. I think that only solidifies support from that base that really truly believes that Andrew Gillum is a socialist and that he's going to turn Florida into Venezuela or whatever the talking point is at this point.
And I don't know the numbers, but when we're talking about turnout, it would stand to reason that Democrats have a higher margin for gaining voters to come to the polls. So really what you're seeing here is DeSantis and Republicans going hard after their base, because those are the folks they need to turn out and win this race.
Let's go to your calls now as we talk about the governor's race here on the Friday Media Roundtable. Both Ron DeSantis and Andrew Gillum were in downtown Jacksonville last night. Who will get your vote? 549-2937. Just a couple of weeks to go, and early voting starts a week from tomorrow. Absentee ballots are already coming in, so really the election is already happening as we speak. 549-2937. Tracy is in Mandarin. Hi, Tracy. Good morning. Go ahead.
I am a health provider, and I tell you, this will take my vote for Gillum. And everybody I see, they think about health and they think positive about him. So I support him. Thank you.
So you support him based on his healthcare platform then?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you a doctor or a nurse?
I am a doctor for 40 years. If your health is good, everything is good. Rest is secondary. And if he is talking about health and about Florida and bringing a lot of money to health provider, I think he will take my vote, plus many other people I know. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thanks for that.
And so that's the thing. So there's a very, they're very different when it comes to the philosophy around healthcare. And GLM is pushing the envelope on how to make healthcare affordable in the state of Florida, when DeSantis is saying what we have now is working without pulling down the money from the federal government. The point is,
from the Republican side, the idea is we can't pull down the Medicaid money because the feds would pay 90%, but Florida would still pay 10%, and we can't afford that.
Yeah.
That's the Republican argument.
That's right, and DeSantis is also pushing the whole, you know, how much are our taxes going to go up to support this and other things, and that's a very real concern with a lot of folks.
Now, Gillum is proposing raising the corporate tax rate. He'd like to see teachers get paid $50,000 a year. He wants criminal justice reform. He campaigned last night about Amendment 4. We'll talk about the ballot amendments in a minute. That would restore voting rights to former felons in the state. Of course, DeSantis against that. On any issue, basically, you're talking about two candidates who could not be further apart. You couldn't have a starker contrast for which way the state's going to go.
No, and they both represent, I think, you know, the, I don't want to say the extremes of their base, but Ron DeSantis is certainly more of a, you know, a far-right conservative, and Andrew Gillum is definitely placing himself as the most progressive candidate that we've had, you know, a serious candidate for governor. And of course, you know, Gillum supports Amendment 4, I believe. And right now, the system with the clemency board is not working, I think, for most felons.
Let's go to, it's 549-2937. Let's go to Daryl in St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, good morning.
Good morning. I'm a registered independent who owns a corporation. If I stay healthy, I generate $50,000 a year for the government. If I have a heart attack on this phone call, I become a liability and probably cost the government $50,000 a year. It is.
Don't have a heart attack on this phone call, please.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna vote for Gillum. It's only halfway there. But, you know, it's kind of absurd that I spend or give the government all of this money and they can't even, you know, basically change the oil in my heart or anything else. I got to run and pay more for it. So I'm going to vote for Gillum, and I'm a registered independent. So if that helps you, you know, that's the way it is. And I have a corporation which probably will pay more taxes for it.
Wow. Daryl, I like your turn of phrase. Make sure you don't need to change the oil in your heart. Make sure you don't wait too long between oil changes, right? Isn't that what they always say at Jiffy Lube?
That's right.
Yeah. Daryl, thanks. Well, interesting getting this very unscientific feedback from our listeners.
And one of the things that may be going on is people have, some of the residents and citizens of Florida have seen what it's like not to have Medicaid expansion in their life and the economic impact it's having on the state of Florida. With people on the rolls who don't have health care. And this may be a way to, you know, to settle that score, at least try something different if they believe that this is an option.
Jimmy tweets the show, it's wrong to paint Gillum as a socialist. He was a delegate for Hillary Clinton and on her VP shortlist. DeSantis can't support his rhetoric with the facts. John Bachman.
Well, the thing I'll be watching over the next couple of weeks, and of course on Tuesday, November 6th, is turnout. You know, they just started early voting in Georgia. I think was it yesterday?
Right.
It was earlier
and
this week, I think.
And that's a hot governor's race, too.
It's very similar to this one, to be totally honest. And so I believe, and they had people lined up for hours in places like Cobb County, which is historically a very conservative district area for the suburb of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And so, and that's just one spot. They have lines everywhere. And so this is a midterm election. It's not a presidential election. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to, turnout is going to be, we keep hammering that and it seems very basic. People at home are probably scratching their heads like, why does he keep talking about this, John? But it's true. This is what's going to be the telltale sign here.
Well, the vote by mail participation has been running in favor of Republicans, as usual.
Yeah. Yes.
But that's bad news for Democrats, as they need to get that vote by mail number up in order for it to resonate with the turnout. Because once they get behind vote by mail, it typically
doesn't. On the flip side, they're going to have, for the first time, voting places on college campuses.
That's right. And UNF had to fight to get Edward Waters had to fight for those early voting sites.
Yeah, how far away 2 months ago was, you know, when we were talking about that.
Right.
Andy emails the show, I was born with a defective aortic valve. It was replaced at Mayo in 2012. Staying alive resonates with me as a healthcare issue. Unfortunately, the selfishness which pervades our society leads people to care only about things which directly affect them. Gillum has my vote, as I really have no other choice. Okay, let's take a few more calls. Wow. Elizabeth in Jacksonville Beach. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Hey, yeah, it was actually already tweeted, but I just wanted to clarify that he's not a socialist, and I'm disappointed that it took a tweet for that to be identified here, because he has clearly said he's not. And also endorsement, Bernie Sanders has endorsed him, but so has Barack Obama. So I just hate that, you know, people lead with his endorsement from Sanders and paint him as a socialist when, again, he is not. And I think, I don't mind, I voted for Bernie Sanders, but I think they're trying to paint him farther left than he is.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Yeah, and I don't think anyone in this group called Gillum a socialist. I think someone said Ron DeSantis is using that word to describe Gillum.
That is how Ron DeSantis has characterized Andrew Gillum. That is what his Republican opponent has categorized him as.
Alvin in San Marco. Hi, Alvin.
Hey, I'm going to have to go with Gillum on this one. I'm actually not registered with any party, but I think I found DeSantis' commercials, you know, telling his kid to build the wall and all this stuff to be pretty cringy. So I think I'm going to go with Gillum.
Okay, thanks for that. Okay, the DeSantis ad that came out a couple of months ago, moderates and liberals hated it. Conservatives loved it. They thought it was funny. They like seeing Ron DeSantis tie himself so closely to the president. And so that's a strategy that this candidate is banking on.
Conservative base loved it.
The conservative base, but turning out the conservative base, yeah, by aligning himself closely with Trump.
So you what you're hearing is a lot of non-party affiliated people who kind of feel like that's not the message they want to hear in the state of Florida, given the fact that you wouldn't have any impact on the border at all here in Florida. So it's interesting that the practices of the primary race haven't really resonated in the DeSantis campaign yet. But I got a feeling that coming down the stretch in the last week or so, we're going to be reminded a little bit more, because no one brought that up, right? This, you know, the caller did. No one's brought that up about how, what type of imagery had to play on his decision-making.
Let's take one more call. Amber on the South Side, and then we'll move on. Amber, who gets your vote?
Andrew Gillum definitely gets my vote. I'm a registered Democrat, but issues involving the environment and issues involving healthcare are very important to me. So, 100%, he's got my vote.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, the latest polling on this race... This was the first big poll of voters since Hurricane Michael, by the way. A dead heat, 47% for Gillum to 45.9% for DeSantis, a 1-point difference. And of course, as John said, that can change because turnout will hold the key to this race, along with all the other races on the ballot. Okay, if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. And also making news this week, Jaguars owner Shad Khan made headlines worldwide yesterday when he announced he's withdrawing his bid to buy Wembley Stadium in London, the famous soccer venue. It's been home to several Jaguars games, but Khan left the door open to buying Wembley in the future. Of course, rumors have swirled for years that he'd like to move the team for London. Khan said, though, he was trying to buy Wembley as just a business venture to beef up his other properties. The Jaguars will play in Wembley against the Eagles on October 28th, 549-2937. As we discuss this, David Cotton, how does this affect the franchise?
Well, Mark Lamping held some media availability yesterday, and he said, you know, in not so many words, this is kind of a bummer. They have talked about, you know, these different planks of revenue that they need to generate because of this quote unquote challenging small market that they're in Jacksonville. And the reason why Wembley is such an attractive offer for them is because they would be able to charge rent to anything that happens there. You know, they hold concerts, obviously, you know, English football, American football. And the NFL games are some of the most profitable events that occur at that stadium. And so whether or not that money would ultimately trickle back to Jacksonville is to be determined. But what Lamping said is now they really have to get Lot J done. They really have to get whatever they want to do with the shipyards done. It now puts more pressure on them, at least from their perspective.
kind of get the impression that some of the other NFL owners are going, whew.
Yeah.
Because if this deal goes through and Shah Khan has Wembley to establish his marketplace over there, then, you know, he becomes the big fish of the NFL. And no longer Jerry Jones. He becomes the guy who used to be. And Shah Khan is kind of sort of taking over position as lord of the NFL. And but I kind of get a feeling
First among equals.
Yeah, well, I kind of get a feeling that this isn't the end we're going to hear about this because it's too important of a deal. And unlike the types of deals you see here in Jacksonville, when Shah Khan says, I want to do something, you know, city council usually kind of falls in line. You know, everybody kind of falls in line. Let's build something else. That didn't happen over there. And that was really the reason why he pulled back and said, you know, I didn't want to be divisive. I didn't really think it would be this hard. It's not like in Jacksonville.
Yeah, yeah. London's a little different. Yeah.
There's a lot on... Ravel in all of this. There's so many things that, you know, I've been trying to figure out if this is good or bad for the Jaguars. I'm a big fan. I admit, I know David is too, and I'm sure we all are. But, you know, so many things. First of all, look at the revenue last year, $391 million for the Jaguars. That's up about $18 million, $13 million from the year before. Jacksonville valued at $2 billion, excuse me. Number 25 on the NFL list. There are 32 teams. So that's pretty good for a Jacksonville city that is one of the smallest. I think it's the second smallest market in the NFL. So that means there's some teams that are not doing as well. That being said, the Jags are immensely important to this city. It makes us legitimizes Jacksonville, no matter whether you're a fan of the NFL or not. When you're an NFL city, it means something in the world of business and drawing businesses mm-hmm. and people. So they're, I mean, as the Jags go to some degree, Jacksonville does go, there are lots of things that we can do independently of the Jags. But so is it good or bad? I don't know for sure, because if you believe what the Jags are saying, we need this revenue to continue to be a viable number 25 team in the market.
If he had bought Wembley, he would have gotten a lot of food and beverage and sweet revenue from owning that stadium mm-hmm. that could have come back here. So it looks like a net negative.
Yeah. And, you know, for the way they look at, you know, revenue in the NFL, right? It's this exclusive club. And when Shah bought the team, I think it was valued at like $700 million or whatever. He bought it from, you know, the Weavers and the other minority owners. You know, the value of this team has increased. So I think people sort of roll their eyes when the team says we're struggling with revenue. When you've sold out your stadium at least a lot this year, you had a good season last year, you are one of only 32 cities with a team, and you've got a great stadium deal. You've got a bunch of enhancements that have been made to this thing. So I think it's hard for the average Joe to say, oh, we feel bad for you guys.
Yeah, they make a good chunk of revenue from the London deal. But at the same time, you have to think about it in terms of how the people in London look at it. Wembley Stadium is a treasure. It's a national treasure over there. And so for someone to come in and buy it, it takes a little more. It's a little harder to swallow.
Well, not only somebody, an American.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's
right. So, you know, you think about the losing that national treasure, the control of it anyway, to someone who, you know, who's from another country, then that's a big deal to people over there. And you can kind of understand why there was some pushback to the deal.
Stanley is in downtown Jacksonville. Hey, Stanley, I'm not sure if you were calling about the governor's race, but now we're talking about this. What are your thoughts? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, when it comes to Shah Khan was never going to buy that football stadium in London. That was a play. I've been to London too. Also, but I wanted to say something. I didn't hear anything about education in Florida, according to the information that I heard, that it was 42 in the country. And that's very important here, rather along with health care. I didn't hear anyone talking about education.
And thanks for that. Yeah, that has been somewhat of an issue with the governors and Senate races. It hasn't been at the top of the discussion points, but yes. I mean, you've got the typical split, partisan split on the governor's race. Andrew Gillum wants to give teachers a raise, give them $50,000 a year. Ron DeSantis is pushing more privatization measures, more school choice measures, more vouchers, making more funds available for parents to have more school choice. So it's what you would expect from these two.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the nail there. You know, also with Ron DeSantis, he's certainly going to follow the trendy party line right now, and that is more charter schools. Again, more school choice, Andrew Gillum, and exactly what you just said.
Yeah, but the difference is that we already know what school choice does. We're in it now. We already have school choice. What we haven't done is looked at paying teachers what they deserve, and that's what Gillum seems to be proposing. And voters are going to have to decide if they want to, you know, address the teacher pay situation the way Gillum is proposing, and see if that helps. Or if that's one of the things that can help with solving our education problem.
I think that wherever you fall politically, people do agree that our educational system is not satisfying the majority of voters.
Yeah.
Maddening is the extreme contentiousness and the total disagreement about what to do about that. And the deadlock just does not, the logjam has not broken yet in this state or anywhere in the country.
Big money involved.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah.
And I think it's very easy for everybody to recognize that our K-12, our public university systems are wildly underfunded. But how, you know, you prioritize those dollars, both of these candidates offer a completely different view on that. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Now, if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we welcome John Bachman of Action News, David Cotton of The Daily Record, and Real Talk host Charles Griggs to Studio 5. To talk about the biggest stories of the week, the number to join us, 549-2937. Now, speaking of sports and football, we learned this week the Jacksonville Landing might be left out of the party when Florida Georgia comes to town next weekend. Of course, the Landing has been the spot to go to for decades when the party-ready fans roll into Jacksonville for the big game. But this year, they might have to go somewhere else. The Landing and the city are locked in a bitter legal fight. And the city has not yet issued a special events permit for concerts at the Landing during game weekend. The big game is coming up next weekend on October 27th. A lot of people may be left to just wander the streets of Jacksonville. They can come in here and have a drink. That'd be
fun. Careful now. Yeah, careful about that.
Well, the
RV City will pop up around this building within a few days.
Right.
So
yes,
we have gotten used to welcoming them every year, and where they'll go this year is anybody's guess.
Well, you know, I understand. You know, the city is wrapped up. For those who aren't aware, the city is wrapped up in two lawsuits with the owners of the Landing, Slayman Enterprises, and this is another tactic in that lawsuit, saying that, you know, we're no longer going to, since the city's view, they have evicted them. They are no longer issuing special event permits. But the thing is that they've never required the Landing to have special event permits for these type of events. It's technically city property. And I don't know how productive this is in
that
fight,
though. This as a punitive move.
Absolutely.
By the city.
Yeah. I mean, they can wrap it around whatever dressing language they want to talk about, safety or, you know, the terrible events that happened earlier this year at the Landing. But the reality is this is a tactic. It is a pressure point that they know that, you know, they can push.
Mm. Yeah. And it may be one of those situations where they just want to get their attention as this thing moves on, you know, the lawsuits move forward. But I have a feeling that something's going to happen at the Landing. You know, there's going to be some type of entertainment going on. This won't stop the show because something's always going on at the Landing, whether or not it's, you know, sanctioned by the city or it's a private event. Something's going to go on out there, and I don't think it's going to stop the party.
They did announce Cole Swindell is performing at Daly's Place after the game. So
That's where their focus is. Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, sure. They're trying to pull all the energy over this way. Yeah,
but you know, you see, like, what are all the shots of, right? When the TV cameras are on for the game, right? It's the Landing. It's the party the night before that is packed at the Landing, and you see, to John's point, that the city is trying to move that party
over to
Daly's Place.
Daly's Place,
old beautiful facility they built over there.
We'll see what happens with that. And JEA is in the news again this week. 9 candidates have interviewed to be the Jacksonville Utilities' next CEO. Meanwhile, last week, Moody's downgraded JEA and the city of Jacksonville's debt obligations. So unwelcome eyes on JEA, a lot of scrutiny. And by the way, I'm getting a lot of feedback from listeners saying that the process for picking the next CEO has not been transparent enough to the public.
So they've had one-on-one interviews with the board of directors individually, and they will continue through, I believe, the end of the month. And then next month, they will have public interviews, I believe, with these candidates. So you can come and, you know, it's open to the public. I believe they'll live stream that as well. And there's a lot of qualified candidates on this list. I mean, these are, you know, executives at large, you know, utility companies, people who've had a lot of years of experience, and Aaron Zahn.
Yeah, Aaron Zahn is the interim CEO, Mayor Curry's handpicked guy when he was appointed interim CEO over what many saw was a more qualified executive within the utility, Melissa Dykes. There was criticism that he really didn't have the skill set to lead the company. Will he be chosen by the board as the permanent CEO is the big question.
Yeah, and what I've talked to in the community say that what they would like to see, I mean, to make it look legitimate is for Aaron Zahn not to get the job. Maybe he can keep a position in there someplace, but maybe he shouldn't get the job, and that would make it look like all of this has been legitimate all along. And then JEA can move forward, because this is going to be one of those things that they go forward. People aren't going to forget about all of the information that came out almost this time last year regarding the potential sale and all of that. And that is going to live with the mayor, because Aaron Zahn's his guy, you know, fair or unfair, it's going to live with him if this guy gets the job.
And could this whole thing be fodder for a potential challenger to Mayor Curry? This whole imbroglio with JEA.
It could, but right now, who is it? And I mean, there are a couple of names that easily come to the surface, but in the reality, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I'm going to go out and say it will be.
There'll be a challenger. Yeah, right. I just don't know how
successful,
how viable.
Well, there were commercials, there were advertisements before, you know, saying that the JEA was being sold and the mayor was behind it. So I can't imagine that whoever runs against the mayor is going to let this issue go without trying to use it as a campaign issue.
And now one thing has also happened since this board meeting, right? So Moody's announced that they were going to do this downgrade. Well, Fitch came out, yesterday and said that, well, this lawsuit with Plant Vogel over the, you know, JEA trying to get out of this power purchase agreement, which is the reason why Moody's is saying they're downgrading them. Fitch came out and said, it doesn't affect us. It doesn't affect, you know, our ratings. We believe that they're making their payments. Alan Howard, and who's the board chair, made a very, very pointed effort at the board meeting to go on record and lambast Moody's and just reiterate that JEA pays their debts and that they're you know, sound financially.
Okay. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida, the zombie edition, just in time for Halloween. Only in Florida can you take a college course in zombies. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
Professor Eric Smaugh of Rollins College in Orlando has to turn students away from his course every semester. It's called Zombies, Serial Killers, and Mad Men. It's one of the most popular classes on campus. What makes Smaugh's course unique is that it's offered through his philosophy department, the Rollins College philosophy department. Smaugh says since zombies have murderous intent, he looks at them through the prism of consciousness.
I heard it's to die for.
Wow.
And only in Florida are there 27,000 proposed constitutional amendments on the November ballot. No, actually, there are 12. But what that means is when you go to vote in this upcoming midterm election, you, the voter, will be confronted with one of the longest ballots this state has seen in the last 20 years.
So you got to do your homework.
You got to do your homework. That's right. Go to the League of Women Voters website or a number of other websites to research these amendments, and you can thank your state legislators and the Constitution Revision Commission for all of the ballot amendments, which somehow the legislature could not pass through the normal legislative process.
We only got 3 weeks left.
That's right. Thank you, John Bachman of Action News, Charles Griggs of Real Talk, and David Cotton of The Daily Record. Guys, thanks for being here and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. This week I chat with Ronnie Lundy about Appalachia, including pickled bologna and chili buns from the Dixie Pool Room. Also on this week's show, Mark Kurlansky traces the history of milk from creation myths to ice cream machines. We also learn a new way to make pesto. Coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX.
Sunday morning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
The very best of modern folk and acoustic alternative music tonight on String Theory. Listen to String Theory this evening at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Tune in, find out.
Welcome back. Well, local personality Octavius Davis is involved in so many interesting ventures around town. But what people may not know that some years ago, he was so low, he once contemplated suicide. Davis has come a long way since those dark days, and he's out now with a new venture, The Pop Life. It's coming to the Ritz Theater tomorrow. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Octavius Davis to Studio 5. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's good to have you. Now, you are involved with a lot of stuff at the Ritz Theater, but also you're a voice actor, a motivational speaker. You do a lot of things. So this is the new thing with you. What is The Pop Life?
The Pursuit of Passion Life.
Oh, okay.
Much like you mentioned in my intro, that dark time that I was in really shed a lot of light on what my impending future was going to become. Because the main thing that prevented me from moving forward with that suicide contemplation is a voice on the inside that said, you can either take your life or dedicate your life pursuing what you're truly passionate about. And so it's been 11 years now since I've been really digesting that statement and finding the different ways that I could apply it in all areas of my life.
Very nice. So this is coming up at the Ritz Theater tomorrow, 11 a.m. What's going to be on stage?
So it's going to be a combination of two things. Myself, I'll be giving a brief motivational speech, maybe 15, 20 minutes on the front end. And then I have a special guest. Her name is Vera Jones. She's an award-winning broadcast analyst for ESPN and the Big Ten Network. She did a motivational video on Goldcast maybe a year ago that went viral with over 43 million views. And she lives right here in Jacksonville.
Wow.
And so I called her up because she was also, ironically, my broadcast professor in college.
Really? Where was that?
Edward Waters College.
Okay.
And so I called her up, let her know what I was doing. And so that interaction with she and I would be more interview type style.
What made her video so memorable?
She was speaking about her book, Play Through the File, but she was speaking about an incident whereby her son had an unfortunate incident that left him blind and how he began overcoming that physical challenge and how she also learned lessons from him.
And that's something you've done as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How'd you do it?
Trial and error.
Isn't that true of all of us? We've got a call for you, Octavius. It's Mary on line one. Hey, Mary, you're on the air. Good morning. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. Mary, are you there? Hello?
Andy Johnson. I'm using my wife's phone.
Oh, it's Andy. Andy Johnson. It says wife Mary Johnson, Andy, on the caller ID. Go ahead, Andy.
I just had a very quick comment. I'm a big fan of Octavius Davis. I think he's a wonderful guy. I want to sign up for his fan club.
Well, you need to come to his show tomorrow, don't you?
I will try.
All right. All right. Thanks for that call, Andy.
Well, I have to say, down to business, Andy Johnson.
That's right.
When I was 18 years old, which is when I got my start in radio, I was Andy's producer for his show.
No way.
Wow. Great to hear you, Andy. That was a very long time ago. But yeah, the first radio station I got my start at, I worked with Andy Johnson.
When I first moved to Jacksonville, I was at a little house party in the neighborhood we used to live in. And someone said, to learn a little bit about the city, you need to listen to this show by this guy. I forget his name, but it's called Down to Business. And I said, oh, that sounds interesting. And
yeah.
So, yeah, I did listen to it a lot. And so I had no idea you had that connection. You have a great voice, too.
You're
a voice actor.
Yes.
And you're doing a lot with that as well.
I am. As a matter of fact, I was sharing with you very briefly, in 2019, I'll actually be selling my voice.
How do you do that? And how can I do that too?
Well, as a voice actor, of course, we audition for different gigs, you know, whether it's a narration or a radio commercial or what have you. Well, essentially what's going to happen on my website, themilliondollarvoice.com, people will be able to go to my Buy My Voice page and select what day of the week they like to purchase my voice. It can be for a phone conversation, to host an event, to do a commercial. I want to be as creative as possible with this particular venture. And here's the thing as well. It's going to be for a dollar. So January 1st, they can buy my voice for a dollar. And then it increases by a dollar each day after that.
All through the year?
All throughout the entire year.
And how are you going to convince people to do this?
Well, throughout my life since 13, when I developed my voice, people would always say, man, if I had your voice, I would do X, Y, Z. So I figured I'd give them the opportunity to. So, of course, on social media, and I'll be doing some marketing and things of that nature. So we'll see how creative people can be.
I love it. Go to Octavius's website. And do people need tickets for the event at the Ritz?
They do. It is a ticketed event. You can purchase tickets from the Ritz box office or from Ticketmaster.com.
Okay. This is coming up tomorrow, The Pop Life at the Ritz Theater. And by the way, when you go, also go over to the museum inside the Ritz. If you've never done that, you really need to do that because that's probably the best place in town to learn the true story of racial struggle in Jacksonville, Florida.
Absolutely.
So go tomorrow to the Ritz Theater, Saturday, October 20th, 11 a.m. Get your tickets online and go see Octavius in The Pop Life with viral video star Vera Jones as well. A great show.
Thank you. Can I also give a free gift to your listening audience?
Sure.
If you go to my Facebook page or Instagram, go to OD the VC, and there is a 10 question questionnaire that I'm giving for free. It's called 10 Effective Questions to Determine Your Inner Genius. And these are questions that I actually use to help me get on the path that I'm currently on.
All right. I'm going to check that out too.
Please do.
And I'm going to figure out how to sell my voice.
I'll help you with some tips.
I need some extra change, Octavius. You can help me. In a moment, the author of 15 Views of Jacksonville. We'll be right back.
Join us Sunday nights at 7 on 89.9 for classic old-time radio with music, mystery, comedy, and news. It's all at 7 o'clock Sunday nights, only on 89.9.
Comcast Business, providing a gig speed network that gets business done. Comcast Business, beyond fast. More at comcastbusiness.com.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Florida law requires drivers to give at least a 3-foot clearance when passing bicyclists. A violation means a traffic fine and license points.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
The Affordable Care Act is a central issue in Arizona's Senate race, but the way voters perceive the law has changed. We'll meet a mother who saw it as a lifesaver, then a burden, and now chooses to go without insurance.
Like, I don't have a backup plan right now. It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, healthcare in Arizona's midterms. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Ira Plato. This week on Science Friday, a sleep scientist spills the beans on insomnia, night owls, and naps.
One of the great things about being a sleep researcher is if I take a nap in my office in the afternoon, no one can complain.
Plus, why genes may decide your bedtime on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Is the president giving Saudi Arabia the benefit of the doubt in the disappearance of journalist Jamal Khashoggi? Donald Trump insists he's not. Still, the evidence points to a state-sanctioned murder of a U.S. resident. That news has dominated this week, but what else do we need to catch up on around the world? The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, finally, this hour, it's a diverse literary portrait of life in Jacksonville, from the beaches to the urban core and beyond. 15 Views of Jacksonville, Short Stories from a Bold City, is out today. Jared Ripkema of Bridge 8 Press is behind this new project and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a beautiful book, and you raised the money for it on Kickstarter. Congratulations.
Thank you. We did. We felt like this book was very much a community project. We gathered 15 writers. It ended up being 16. We have 15 short stories and one essay. And we felt like the Jacksonville community would want to be behind something like this. So we launched Kickstarter back in July and reached our goal by 120%.
$9,000. And what is inside this book, which is on sale in independent bookstores all over town, is 15 short stories and an essay about this city from local authors.
Yes. It's short stories set in different parts of Jacksonville. And the idea was that no matter where you traveled to in Jacksonville or where you grew up, you have a different idea of what it is. For example, if you lived or traveled to Ponte Vedra, you have a different idea than if someone went to Orange Park, for example. Very different parts. And we wanted to have stories that were set in the different parts so that we could maybe better understand our city as a whole.
How did you choose the writers and these stories?
A long process. We first needed them to either live here now or have lived here in the past and have close ties to the city. And then we had to narrow it down because they needed to have close ties with the district. And we wanted to represent as many of our parts of town as possible. So narrowing it down to there. And then it came down to, quite honestly, schedules. Short stories are hard to write, especially ones that are true and authentic. And so getting all of these writers to write us pieces, it was amazing.
There are great stories in this book, and you are the publisher. Your imprint is called Bridge 8 Press. Is that a reference to the bridges of Jacksonville?
It is.
Okay.
There are 7 bridges, famously, in Jacksonville. And the 8th bridge we call a metaphorical bridge. It bridges peoples, and it bridges development and culture, and it bridges a lot of things. Our big push is that stories build bridges, and Bridge 8 is the outcome of that.
It came out of that. Now, a lot of people like you have come here from somewhere else, so you have a different perspective on Jacksonville than a native person. Mm-hmm. It's hard to define, I guess. It's a city that's hard to define. But more and more people are trying to give it an identity. And this is, I guess, one way of doing that.
Extremely difficult. And it's probably why this is an anthology of stories rather than a book about it from one author, right? Especially coming in here, seeing it from a different perspective, I wanted to know the Jacksonville that locals know. Maybe not locals, but people are from here. People who are born here and were raised and grew up here. I wanted to see Jacksonville from that side, too. And then I also wanted to intersperse people who have moved here. What do they see when they see Jacksonville as well?
Do you have a favorite?
I'm going to hold that. They're all really awesome. The intro really does get you into the book. We're very excited to have a release party tonight at Manifest Distilling, where we'll have the book and we'll have 4 of the authors read. Mark Ari, Hurley Winkler, Michael Wiley, and Sohrab Homi-Phrasis will be there tonight reading and signing books. It's at 7 p.m. at Manifest.
You also have the Iowa Short Fiction Award winner contributing some acclaimed authors, as you mentioned, including Tim Gilmore, who's written 16 books. Michael Wiley has written quite a few books. So really, the literary elite of this city are in this book.
They were very gracious and gave us their stories and their time, and we created an amazing book.
So let's say this one more time. If you want to come to the release party for 15 Views of Jacksonville, Short Stories from a Bold City. The party is tonight at Manifest Distilling. What else do people need to know?
Manifest Distilling tonight, but we'll also be launching a book tour throughout the city. Our next event is actually at the San Roque Bookstore on October 25th, which is next Thursday. Tim Gilmore and Nan Cavanaugh will be reading there. And we'll have different locations that we'll launch this weekend.
Get your copy at San Marco Books and More, which is a sponsor of this show. But any independent bookstore will have their copy.
And also online at bridge8.com/Jacksonville.
Yes, at bridge8.com. It's 15 Views of Jacksonville, Short Stories from a Bold City. Jared Ripkema of Bridge 8 Press is behind this idea. kudos to you and have fun tonight.
Thank you.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Michelle Corum is our director. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. We always love your feedback. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to join us at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program, where we talk about the biggest stories from the week. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.